Roxo Media House.
Welcome back to Fortitude. JW Wilson here. Today's episode, it's a powerful one. The subject today is teen suicide. The man in front of me is a guy by the name of Brad Hunstable. He's from Granbury, Texas, local guy. Brad attended West Point, then served 5 years in the Army. Got his MBA from The Ohio State after his service, which we can gloss over that, first around Texas parts. Went on to work for Hillwood for a bit. Then he founded and he was the CEO of a live streaming website called Upstream, which he later sold to IBM in 2016. Currently, he works for Linear Labs, which he founded in 2014. It's a next generation electric motor company, correct?
Yep.
More or less. But the purpose of Brad being here today is the subject, the teen suicide. Brad's experienced every parent's nightmare. And I'm gonna struggle to get through this, Brad, but I appreciate you being here and what you're about to tell us, but you lived every parent's nightmare. You're here today because you're carrying the torch for what we call Hayden's Corner, the very important goal, which we'll get into here just now. But again, thank you for being here. And when you're ready, would you please share your story about Hayden?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me, JW. The story of Hayden is one that had tragedy, but also beautiful because he's my son, right? And middle of two kids, I have an older daughter who now is 19, and at the time of Hayden's passing, she was, I believe, 16. And I've got a younger daughter as well, his little sister. She was 8 at the time. She's now 11. And, you know, normal kid. Brought him up in Aledo, Texas, where I'm from. Played football for Aledo, like a lot of kids do. Played soccer and loved sports, loved his friends. Real social, just a normal kid. Really good kid. And the story behind what happened was in December 2019, he played a video game called Fortnite. I don't know if your kids ever played that.
Yes, sir.
Very popular at the time. It seemed like every kid in the country was playing that video game. And he wanted to get a new computer monitor for Christmas that year. So we got him a computer. Santa got him a computer monitor, right? And it was one of those real nice big ones, like kind of curved Dell monitors.
Right.
And to play Fortnite on. And in February of 2020, he was playing it, and like I used to do, probably anybody who plays some of these games, he got mad at the video game, and he threw his controller down on the desk, and it bounced up and hit his monitor, and it broke it. It was an LCD screen, put a big crack in it, right? Mm-hmm. And he came down and told me, he was upset, and I told him, hey man, I don't care about the monitor, but I care how you react. You can't get mad at these video games like this, man. It's just, it's just a video game, So, unfortunately, it was a really expensive present. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna learn a lesson. You're not gonna get another one. It's basically the message I told him. And then, as you recall, in 2020, the world changed, right? The COVID happened, and then the lockdown happened, and then they closed schools down, and just a really weird time for everybody, right? All the fear and media, hoopla around it all, what's going on, right? And so he asked us, he came down and he said, hey, I got nothing to do, I have nothing going on, I have no connection with my friends, I'm not talking to anybody because I've talked to my friends through Fortnite, with their little headphone, that's how they hung out. He goes, I'm so bored, can I get another monitor? And we talked it over and told him that, okay, but you're gonna work around the house. So we made him, do some chores and, work his butt off, and he did. And we ended up buying him a new monitor, not nearly as nice, like a small little cheapo, like one on Amazon. And April 17th, 2020, about 3 or 4 weeks later, My water well in my house broke, and I hadn't seen my dad, and he came over and helped me fix it. And Hayden, me, and him fixed the beautiful sunny day. I think it might have been like a Friday. We fixed the water well for 3 or 4 hours. Was normal, right? And remember, I kissed him on the head. Still remember to this day. And he went upstairs, and I had to take a phone call. And it was just a 30-minute phone call. And during that time, I came out of my room or the office, and my 8-year-old daughter came down the stairs and said Hayden had hung himself. And I ran up the stairs as fast as I could, and total shock, of course, and tried to save him. It was unsuccessful, obviously, but it was obviously a nightmare situation, and he took his life. And I remember the first few days were just so confusing. Like, where did this come from? I was just with you. My dad was just with you. We were all just with you. You were happy and normal, and like, it was just, we had no clue. Like, this came out of nowhere. Went through a cell phone and all that, and everything was fine. He wasn't depressed. He didn't have anxiety, as far as we knew, or any of that stuff. And it was just a complete shock. And as my little one, my 8-year-old at the time, I started talking a little bit more. Actually, he told a neighbor during the chaos of it all. Turns out he broke his monitor again. And he, in that, you know, rash of emotion and the anger and fear of getting in trouble or whatever it may have been, made an impulsive decision to do that. And, so it was the worst day of my life, without a doubt. And then the EMTs and paramedics and stuff, they tried their butts off. They worked their butts off. They tried. We ended up going to Cook's, and they tried. It just didn't happen.
How quickly, Brad, did the paramedics? Is there any reason that they were delayed? That wouldn't have mattered.
No, in fact, when I found him, and again, there was this window. I took him down and applied CPR and did all that stuff. And I happened to have an AED in the house, automatic electronic defibrillator. And I told my little daughter to go downstairs and go get it for me. And I tried to use it, and it didn't work. And I was on the phone 911, and they were telling me what to do. But it felt like there was a cop that showed up pretty quickly. I was in his room. I remember when the cop came around the corner, the look on his face was just, I knew it was bad. I mean, I looked at the cop, and the look on his face, I'll never forget his face. I actually feel bad for the guy. And he tried and helped, and he had another defibrillator. We tried his, and it wasn't working. And then the EMTs were there pretty quick, I felt like. I feel like there wasn't an issue with the response or anything like that.
Forgive me for interrupting and asking, but how did Hayden do it? I mean, is it something I can ask?
He hung himself in the closet. It was a very simple means. I don't want to get too graphic, he took a belt, just one belt, and just was laying in it, just like this.
All right.
That was it. He had stacked some toys up, and so, you know. Since then, of course, for years, and it's been 3 years now, but a million questions of why and how did he even know that was possible. And, you know, what I've learned about suicide, you know, I didn't know anything prior to Hayden's death. In fact, I thought people who took their lives were on drugs or they were crazy. Mm-hmm. That was my perception. And that, as I've learned, is a very, very inaccurate perception of suicide. Suicide is always complicated. There's always multiple things that are going on. Mm-hmm. But in youth in particular, it's a second leading cause of death for kids, which is crazy that's the case in the United States of America. And in youth in particular, about 55% of the time it's impulsive, which means they made the decision, you know, very rapidly.
As opposed to like a lingering depression or something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. So some kids have lingering depression and take their life, and there's signs that are obvious. Mm-hmm. And about 55% of the cases, there's no previous medical diagnosis of mm-hmm. any kind of mental health issue, and so so they didn't have any obvious depression or, you know, anxiety, OCD, or whatever it may be, right? And the reason behind that, the science behind it, is in kids, partially you don't have a lot of ways to go, can't go drink a beer or something like that, right? So your choices to go calm yourself are more limited. But from a physiological standpoint, the prefrontal cortex in the brain of a kid is not fully developed until you're like 30, in your, you're like, you know, mid-20s.
Sure.
Like 25 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so youth, kids, tend to make decisions very rapidly or impulsively, and they use the amygdala part of the brain, which is that fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you make a decision with your amygdala is even if you have a fully developed prefrontal cortex, it'll shut down. Mm-hmm. And you almost kind of black out. You don't literally black out, but you cognitively kind of black out.
Right.
And so there's some real data behind the impulsivity, and what it looks like a lot of times is, you know, as a kid, you know, maybe you got bullied and you made a decision very rapidly. Maybe you got in a fight with your parent, mm-hmm. common one I hear. Girlfriend broke up with me, boyfriend broke up with me, very common. When you broke something, very common. Or maybe you're gay or bi or something like that, and you're struggling with that, and you make a very rapid, impulsive decision. And whether it's a kid or an adult, the other thing I've learned is about suicide. Mm-hmm. No one wants to die. Mm. They want to escape pain, even if it's temporary pain, because a girlfriend broke up with me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's a very key distinction to my earlier comment about being crazy people and people on drugs. Yeah. It's just not accurate, and it's a common misperception.
You mentioned the stats of number two reason for death of teenagers. I think 11 through 17, is that accurate?
Correct.
Those stats are staggering. This is part of this, and thank you for the story. This is now, it's a terrible part of your life, but somehow you have got out of bed, begun living again. And now you fly this torch. We talked about it at Hayden's Corner in the intro. Out of this tragedy, you're trying to do this. You're doing this thing, not trying. You are doing this thing to help others, because the answer you told me, and what I know from you, is it's not a complicated thing to do, but people aren't doing it, and they need to be doing it. Can we talk about Hayden's Corner real quick?
Yeah, I think I'm probably no different than most parents who lose a child or have some kind of tragedy. You know, you want to, you know, there's a calling to try to make it better, right? Or try mm-hmm. to make a difference, you know. And if we always said from the beginning, you know, if Hayden's story saves one kid, then, you know, then his life mattered, right? And so about two days after I buried him, we buried him, and we couldn't even have a funeral. It was in the middle of COVID. We had a drive-by funeral. So it was just a really awful deal, the whole thing. And about two days after we buried him, I walked outside. It was like we were mourning at my dad's house, and I opened up my cell phone and I recorded a video on Facebook, on my Facebook account. And I just hit record, and I said, at the beginning of the video, just kind of came out. I said, COVID killed my son, but not in the way you think. Mm-hmm. And I talked about the lockdown. I talked about Hayden a little bit. And I recorded the video mostly to just kind of squash some rumors mm-hmm. that were happening in Aledo, just so everybody knew the real story. And I put the phone down, and it started vibrating. And within an hour, it was vibrating like so much, and every one of those little vibrations was a message. Mm-hmm. It went viral, and within an hour, had like a million people had seen it, and overall, that video ended up like 150 million people have seen it now.
Wow!
And so when that happened, I said, okay, we need to, I want to be a part of the solution, mm-hmm. talk about this. Because there's a tendency with even suicide in particular to make it a very private thing. Like, it's, there's a lot of shame, and it's a family matter. We don't want to talk about it. You know, a lot mm-hmm. of times if you read an article about how someone died and they don't really tell you how, it's probably suicide, because there's a natural instinct to do that.
Yes, indeed.
Because of the stigma. And so after that video went viral, we formed what's called Hayden's Corner. Mm-hmm. It's a 501c3 fund where we ended up raising money to support mental health and suicide awareness and all these things. And we feel like we've done a lot of good. We made a short film not mm-hmm. too long after. We got it out right before Christmas of 2020, called Almost 13. Mm-hmm. It's almost, and you spell out the word 13. It's on YouTube mm-hmm. and Tubi and a bunch of other, you know, online places. And really, the goal of that film initially, the initial project we did, was really three things. Was one, to honor Hayden, tell mm-hmm. his story, right? Two, I wanted to warn parents, or just make parents aware that, hey, this can happen. You know, impulsive suicide in your kid, with your kid, is really, you need to sit down and talk to them mm-hmm. about this, and why you have to talk to them. So that was a really important part of the film. And then lastly, the most important part was how to safely have that conversation with your kid, maybe as young as 8, mm-hmm. you know, the experts say 9, 10, about suicide. And how do you do that in a safe manner so that you're, you know, talking about it? Because at the end of the day, they're going to find out about what suicide is, and you're not going to put it in their brain, anything like that. The data doesn't support that at all. And they're going to find out about it. So what I tell parents is, your kid's going to find out about suicide. So do you want them to find out about it on TikTok, or from a kid, or from Hollywood, or in a very safe and controlled manner from you as the parent?
That makes sense. Well, and the message, the overarching message, is simple. And I don't want to steal your words, but yeah. Talk to your kid. Yeah. Whether you think he's great or he's not, just have the conversation.
Yeah, we say conversations matter.
Conversations matter.
Yeah, that's the tagline for the nonprofit. And yeah, I can tell you a story. We when we started doing this, and I started saying conversations matter, and we were working on the movie and had the mm-hmm. video go viral, I had a guy reach out to me from California, and I didn't know him on Facebook, and he wrote me and he said, "Hey man, Brad, I want to just send my condolences, but also tell you, because of Hayden's story, I sat down and talked to my daughter about suicide, and I found out she was suicidal, and I had no idea. She was 16. She was actually cutting herself. She had scars and stuff on her mm-hmm. on her wrist, and he had no idea. And he said, so I want to say thank you. You know, now that I know, we're going to get her help. You know, mm-hmm. and I said, man, that's great, dude. That's awesome. You know, conversations matter, right? Well, he ended up writing me about 2 months later and said, hey Brad, my daughter tried to kill herself. Mm-hmm. She's in the ICU. She's got full organ failure. She's been in a coma for 4 days. They don't think she's gonna make it. And I remember my stomach just, you know, dropped. I was like, oh my gosh. And so, you know, I prayed to Hayden to go up there and tug somebody, and, you know, by prayers and or miracles of modern medicine, all of the above, you know, whatever it was, this girl miraculously makes it with no organ, long-term organ damage. She's got a long road ahead of her, she survived. And I remember he called me about a month after that, and he said, Brad, I just want to talk to you and tell you, thank you for saving my daughter's life. And I remember at the time thinking, all right, and I told him, I said, look, man, that's really kind of you, but I mean, I didn't save your daughter's life, but man, I'm so happy she's okay. And he said, well, no, Brad, I didn't tell you something. He said, what I didn't tell you is my daughter came down the stairs at the last minute and said, Daddy, I did something wrong. And she went into a coma and went to a seizures immediately. He said, if I had not been having those conversations with her proactively, I would have found her probably dead in her room. And so, you know, you just don't know how
she had taken pills, right?
She had taken, yeah, like 60 Tylenol pills or something.
Oh, wow.
Like that. You just don't know how thin that line is. And even in Hayden's case, you know, we didn't have the mistake the biggest mistake we made with Hayden, I didn't know to have that conversation. I didn't sit him down and say, hey, man, don't you break my truck. Wreck my truck as a 16-year-old or break a monitor or someone hurts you. I need to know about it, right? Yeah. Nothing is worth taking your life over. And that's the conversation you gotta have, and we never mm-hmm. did that.
Well, I know because I've been doing some research on you and this whole thing, and there have been people that respond and chirp through social media, but people are having that conversation more and more now, not in no small part to you, which is an extraordinary thing, because I don't know anybody out there watching this that would disagree with that, have the conversation. It's an amazing thing. It sounds almost silly to say it, but to your point, people weren't doing this, so I mean, I can't even tell you how impactful that little statement, have the conversation, really is. And people that will see this, I think you've already made a tremendous impact in the world with your video. I've seen it. It's incredible. Can I ask about your daughters and your wife? I know you never going to be okay, but I think people like myself and others would wonder how do you find strength, and how do you find a way to get up and go again? Is there something you could pinpoint, or is it just I have to go find a way to make good out of a bad thing? Is it something along those lines?
Well, one of the things I've learned about grief, and I wish I didn't have to learn it, but you know, I learned it, is one, everybody grieves differently. Mm-hmm. So everyone grieves at different speeds, in different ways. So that was a real eye-opening part of this journey. It's hard enough to heal yourself, let alone try to help others, your family, heal also. So that's, mm-hmm. it's been tough. I've also learned that at least for me, this is for me, you know, being able to, you know, try to do something positive out of something so awful has been healing for me. Mm-hmm. Talking about it like this is part of my healing, and trying to do good is part of my healing. Mm-hmm. And my wife's different. She doesn't like sitting here on TV and doing, or you know, podcasts and stuff, and doing, that's not her path for healing, which is fine. But for me, it has been a key part. And my daughters, and they're all doing well. We're a year three. It never goes away. I believe this with all my heart. It will never go away. You just learn how to carry it.
Right.
And I still cry, man. This is my journey has not been like some nice, clean, linear progression of improvement.
Understood.
It is a mishmash of to get to those mm-hmm. points, and I have my issues and have my days just like anyone. I still cry most days, you know, and usually for me it's in the morning when I'm like running to the gym or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right? And so grief and healing it's messy, it's complicated, and some unfortunately, and I know a lot of parents who have lost kids, hundreds of them now. So a lot of times people get stuck. It's very easy to do. Because of the pain.
Are you a spiritual person? Were you spiritual before this? Have you become more since? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I grew up Catholic and did that whole thing for, you know, through high school, and then, you know, kind of was in and out of church. You know, I would classify myself as having belief, but, you know, wasn't super intentional about that. Mm-hmm. And since Hayden died, definitely much more so. You know, what I tell people is when you lose a kid, you know, I kind of have to believe, right? That's the only chance I got to see him again. And so on the practical level, you know, I'm going to choose to believe for hope. And when I die, or when we die, if there's nothing, you know, at that point, I guess it doesn't matter. But that hope is really an important part of healing, mm-hmm. I believe. and so amongst other weird stuff that has happened, I definitely would like to characterize myself as someone who has leaned in very, very much more intentional than what I was before, without a doubt. And it's changed me.
Yes, indeed.
For the good.
You mentioned this briefly, and I want to touch it one more time because I think it's very powerful, but you mentioned COVID and the skyrocketing of teen suicide, and no, it's number two. You spoke to me off when we first met, but one more time, why is this problem becoming so great? I know it's a lot of factors, but why are kids progressively finding this avenue to solve problems?
You know, there's a lot of theories about that. And I have my own, I guess, and I'm no expert. But I'm talking to experts and come to my own conclusions. I think a big part of it, frankly, is society's changed a lot in the last 10, 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. From more and more broken families or single parent families, religion decreasing. And then, you know, if you want to look at like what happened in 2007, 2008, mm-hmm. you know, the iPhone came out and social media and these very intense video games that are immersive. I believe it's playing a big factor. And part of the science of why I believe that, and and I'm not the only one, other experts will tell you, is a lot of these, particularly this cell phone and these games, can cause spikes in the chemical dopamine in the brain, like these kind of repeated spikes. And dopamine is the chemical in the brain that's tied to motivation. A lot of people think it's like your pleasure chemical. It's not technically that. It's more like a motivation chemical. Mm-hmm. Your motivation to do whatever, something, right? And when you have these constant spikes in dopamine, it lowers what is called your baseline dopamine. So you're think of it like your average dopamine, right, in your body goes down because these spikes kind of drains it. And it's really hard to raise it. And so when your dopamine goes down, your baseline dopamine goes down, mm-hmm. what that looks like, particularly in youth, is, or even in adults, depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. ADHD, that's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But do you really have those? I mean, is there something fundamentally wrong with you? No, it's a lifestyle choice because you're on these games. And part of my fear of why in the last couple years they've seen such a spike in the ER visits and the self-reporting of depression by youth, mm-hmm. I think it's partially because when you think about what we did with COVID, when we locked everybody down, you got kids out of the routine, they weren't getting exercise,
right,
and a lot of them were on video games and sitting on their phone the whole time. Mm-hmm. So what did you do? You just made them essentially more addicted, yeah, to the device, which lowered their baseline dopamine. And when your baseline dopamine goes down, they start having issues, yeah, and it kind of just compounds, right? Then they don't do as well in school and mm-hmm. the stress of COVID and all that. And so, you know, the other side of that is, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think for many, a pain.
Yeah. Was there a thing or a person that struck you early on in this journey that made a difference, or was this just a long steady road to where we are now? Is there anything you can pinpoint more than the others that led you here? Did something pop into your brain? Do you think you had you're seeing visions and thinking things about heaven and all these things? Did something, what was there an inspirational moment in this journey?
No, I think it's kind of, I probably characterize it more gradual. It's kind of two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. I do feel very fortunate. Shortly after Hayden died, that a couple guys reached out to me who had lost their kid the same way. Mm-hmm. That was really important, because in this first few days and weeks, I mean, it's hard to describe how much in the fog and how reality in the world just became something that's, this can happen. Like, it's, it's still weird to even think about, like, am I even going to be okay? Mm-hmm. Am I going to live? Can I even do this? You know? And having those people reach out to me pretty early on, like within a couple of weeks, they heard the story, was a big deal, because I was able to just, like, wait, okay, you're three? Okay, so you, how did you, you're three, so you made it? You survived, you know, you're still on Earth, and mm-hmm. And you're normal still-ish, you know? How did you, so that was a big deal. Gave me some hope that, okay, so maybe I can get to that point.
Right.
And the battle, it's just, you know, you get to the next little, I mean, the early days is just get to the next minute.
Yes, sir.
And then within a week or two, it's like get to the next day. And then it's like, you know, one foot in front of the other kind of thing. But it's, and now for me now, I'm at year three. I'm like, I want to get to the 10 or five or whatever the number is, right? So you kind of get a little further out.
Yes, indeed. One day at a time. I admire your strength, man. I've known you only for a little while, but I know about you and I know your story, and I do admire your strength. You're going to have some good feedback from this, I believe. And again, the message, overarching message, have the conversation. Conversation matters. Thank you very much for being here. If we can help you in any regards going forward, we're happy to do it. We'll share the website on the end of the show. Is there anything else people should know about how to find you or be part of Hayden's Corner?
Yeah, no, go to the website and watch our film, Almost 13. It's free to the world. It's a short film. It's only 17 minutes. It won the 2021 Global Documentary of the Year. It's really powerful. And if they would, if you would watch it, and if you feel called or compelled, if you'd share it to someone that might help, yeah, that'd be amazing.
We can do that for sure. Well, again, I appreciate you being here, man, and thank you very much. We want to help you have some more good come from this, and there is something good to come out of this, but appreciate you, Brad.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Roxo Media House.